Hello and welcome to your weekly podcast from Freestyle Media in partnership with The Magic Five, where you can get 15% off their products by using the link in the description to this episode. Do also check out Oxalt Strength and Conditioning. You can get yourself a personalised or preset strength and mobility programme to help you get stronger and faster in the pool. So head to www.oxalt.com for more. So this week we're going back through the vault and revisiting an episode that was out almost a year ago, debating the perfect training volume. Unfortunately, the guest I had lined up for this week had to rearrange due to no fault of their own, and it was too late in the day for me to line up another episode in time. Serves me right for sometimes recording these very late on. But the conversation that I had with Helen Gorman, Dan Mills, Katie Moore and Bob Bolton debating the perfect training volume is still just as relevant today as it was back then, and hopefully still feels fresh for you all. And this week's going to be a fun old conversation. So we're going to be exploring training volume. So does the perfect amount of volume exist? And if so, what does that actually look like? So to help us along with that conversation, I'm joined by Masters Swimming Royalty here. We've got Helen Gorman, Katie Moore and Dan Mills. So thanks for joining us on the podcast, guys.
Hello, everyone.
Very much. Hi, everyone.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for having us, Joe.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on. So how are we going to do this? We're going to see how it goes. I've kind of picked you guys because I feel like two of you represent high volume, in my eyes at least, and two of us represent low volume. I'm definitely one of those people. So we're almost going to have a bit of a team high volume, team low volume thing going on here. But we're going to start in generic terms and not really put a badge on ourselves to start with. By the way, in part two, we're going to hear from Bob Bolton, Trafford Metro coach, just to get a coach's perspective. Then we will come back in the virtual room here with us guys for part three to kind of conclude. But just to start things off, and Katie, I'm going to come to you first. When you think of the term high volume, what's the kind of figure that comes in your head, the weekly figure of like kilometres?
I'd say anything sort of greater than about 12K, really.
Yeah. That's would you agree with that one?
I think for a master swimmer, I would probably say, in my mind, anything sort of 50 and 20K would be high volume. I think it's quite a different conversation for sort of age group swimmers.
Yes.
And, in my previous swimming, definitely 50 and 20K was not high volume. But I think for a master swimmer, that's what I would probably say.
Yeah. Would you concur with that, Helen?
Yeah. I mean, in my head, high volume is 20K plus. I have kind of done a bit of a WhatsApp out to people, asking them how much they do. And it's surprisingly higher than I thought from quite a few people. So I don't feel like a freak at the sort of 20 to 25K volume now. I've realised there's quite a lot of people doing that level of training.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And even that volume of training like blows my mind, to be honest, because it's a level I've never reached, even as a kid. But Dan made a good point there about the difference between, you know, what is high volume for a master swimmer and what is high volume for an age group swimmer, because we all know that at age group it can be 50K, it can be a lot more than that. But I mean, we're talking totally different levels. I want to focus obviously on master swimming, or just swimming for adults, I suppose. They've got full-time jobs, you know, families, busy lives, all that kind of stuff. So let's say for argument's sake then that 10K is kind of mid-range, 12K upwards is kind of high volume, and 8K and below is kind of low volume. Where do we all sit currently in that? So Helen, how many sort of kilometres do you aim for a week?
A training block, I'll typically go between 20 and 25, but last week was 26 and a half, which is not, last year I had some bigger weeks than that. But yeah, I mean, if I've done a consistent block between 20 and 25, I'm pretty happy.
And does the level or does the amount of volume, does that differ sort of through the block? So as you're coming towards like a race, for example, you would bring that down?
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty there for me is I train with kids, so they might come down for a meet. And I may or may not, I usually would be doing it with them, but then I've got master's meets that sit kind of outside. So I'm fortunate, I can actually swim quite well in the middle of a training block. So I don't worry too. I know I kind of track my mileage and I do put it on Instagram occasionally, although I've tried to stop doing that, but I look at it just to kind of see where I am, but I'm quite open-minded, to be honest. When I stand on the block, I'm open-minded, but
yeah.
I genuinely enjoy that amount of training, and it seems to work for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. How about you, Dan? What's your current mileage a week?
At the moment, I'm probably getting around about 15 to 20. So probably a little bit less than Helen, but that's kind of where I'm sitting at. Possibly I'd like to do a little bit more, but it's just fitting it in with work and getting the number of sessions in, really.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question for you is, do you feel like that's an ideal amount for you, or would you like to do more if life permitted it?
Yeah, I think at the moment with work and stuff, it's ideal as in what I can fit in, what I enjoy, what's giving me a happy balance. I think if I had more free time, then I think I would like to do a bit more. You know, if I could push it up to closer probably to 30,000 would be ideal for some of the events that I'm swimming if I had the time to.
Yeah. And how about you, Casey?
So I'm currently sitting around 5K. So everybody will probably laugh at that. That's probably one of Helen's sessions in the week. I tend to fit in around my sort of family life, work life. I tend to go to the pool on my lunch break. So I do sort of, I tend to do sort of 3 half-an-hour sessions a week. Sometimes I'll do an evening. But for me, thankfully I'm a sprinter, so that seems to work for me. I don't think it would work if I was a long distance swimmer. I just do really short, sharp stuff. I do a short warm up and I just get in there and I do lots of sort of race pace stuff really to sort of get the best out of the time that I do have in the pool.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you've said that because there are obviously loads of caveats when we talk about volume, things like quality and quantity, things like that. You know, how much of it is fast, how much of it is slow, and so Helen, like, you know, Katie kind of made the joke, a typical session for you could be 5K. So how much of a 5K, if that's true, how much of a 5K session is, you know, top speed work, or how much of it is pretty durable?
Yeah, I mean, a typical session for me is around 5K, so Katie's right there. We'll do a longer warm-up just because we've got time to do it. Sessions are usually 2 hours. There's a lot of drills and skills in there, but they're sort of high-performance drills and skills. Like, you know, if we're doing practicing a technique element, it's got to be done really, really well. So if we're doing race pace, it'd probably be between 1 and 2K a set. And the actual volume of stuff that's at maximum pace, that will vary depending on the time of year. So this morning, for example, we only did, I've already forgotten because it was many hours ago, we did 16:25s at race pace, but or more above race pace at max. But each 25 had a 50 easy between it and it was all pretty chilled. You know, the 25s were off a minute, yeah. The 50s were off a minute and a half. So we are doing those types of sets, but that's kind of a luxury. It's usually more like a race pace 50s off a minute.
Yeah.
And quite big blocks of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. Well, I'm definitely near a Katie's average per week. So I'm somewhere between 7 and 9K myself. So try and do that across 3 sessions. So again, I'm not doing massive sessions, to be honest. At most I'm doing 3K, but it can be anywhere between 2 and 3. I try not to go below 2 per session, unless I'm going in purely just to do some sprint work. It might be like 1.5. But I prefer not to train like that. I prefer to train sort of between 2 and 3, really. But let's talk about our histories then, because Dan, you know, you've already said yourself that you used to do a lot more, and you've already referenced the kind of age group nature of all of this. So what's been the height of volume for you throughout your life?
Probably the peak volumes when I was training what I, you know, classed as proper training full time when I was an age grouper. I was probably averaging between 55 to 65. But it wouldn't be unusual if we were going away in a camp or doing a high training volume week to get, you know, closer to the 70 to 80,000 meters a week.
And I mean, how obviously you could do that, your body was used to it. Do you think you could do that now? Could you pull a 50K week now?
I don't think so. Not without risking injury or illness. I don't think. From going, you know, going 15, 20 to go straight up. I think maybe possibly if you built into it, if you had, say, you were completely free, no job, nothing, and you could build back into it. I think I could build back into maybe 50K, but I think going straight into it would just be asking for trouble at the moment.
Yeah, and in terms of getting the best out of every meter that you swim, do you feel like what you do now is still really, really good quality, and you feel like your body gets the best possible training it can get based on the number of meters that you do a week.
Yeah. I think, like I said before, if I could do more, you know, I would like to do a bit more. I don't think I would want to go back to doing 50, 60,000. I don't think, you know, I would find it enjoyable. And I think that's a real key, you know, component is enjoying the swimming.
Did you find it enjoyable when you used to swim that much?
I can't say that I enjoyed every meter that I did, you know, not all the, I didn't enjoy waking up at, you know, 5 o'clock and going and doing 6,000, 7,000 meters. I enjoyed training hard, and I suppose in general, I enjoyed doing volume, but I didn't enjoy every session I was at and doing every meter there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that sounds good. How about you, Helen? I imagine you were probably somewhere near to Dan as well.
Well, we should probably say that Dan and I are actually from the same club originally, albeit a few years apart. So. Yeah. But I wasn't a distance freestyler, and Dan might be being a bit modest, but he did swim for PB at the European Juniors. So there's a real pedigree there. He hit, you know, top level. So as a breaststroker, I was swimming just over 50K a week most of the time. But, yeah, similar training philosophy, similar sort of background, the same head coach sitting over the top of us deciding what our overall plans were. So, yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Katie? So you're at 5K at the moment. Have you always been low volume, would you say, or was there a time when you did a lot more?
Yeah, well, there was a time when I did a lot more as an age grouper, although still, compared to you guys, it was probably quite low volume. I used to do around sort of 5 sessions a week-ish as an age grouper. Probably did about 25K-ish, something like that. I had a lot of other commitments outside of swimming as well, because I had horses and I competed them as well. So when I wasn't in the pool, I was competing horses. So quite often on a weekend, I'd have a gala one day and then I'd have a horse competition the next. So hence why I couldn't do sort of 8 or 9 sessions like a lot of my teammates did. But to be honest, I think when I came back to Masters in my 20s and I didn't have the time to do that much training, and I only had sort of 3 sessions a week to get the most out of them, I think the focus was really on quality then, instead of sort of quantity, like back when we were all age groupers ploughing up and down the pools. And I seem to get much better results from that. And I just wonder if I'd have done that sort of training as an age grouper, whether I'd have been faster and maybe got more out of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. So, sorry if you mentioned this earlier, but do you currently swim with a club or do you train on your own?
I currently train on my own, yeah, because there's no sort of Masters clubs sort of near to me that fit in with, you know, my work schedule and stuff. So I tend to swim in public sessions, which, again, that's a whole other can of worms. But it's difficult sometimes, obviously, swimming in public sessions. But so I sort of go with a few different options of sets to do, depending on who's in the lane, because you can't always do, yeah, you know, 100 race pace stuff if there's 3 or 4 people in your lane. So I sort of adapt it according to who's there, really.
Yeah, but interestingly, though, based on the type of training that you do, especially if you're doing a lot of sprint work, like you say, does it actually suit you training alone and not with a club? Because I guess if you're training with a club, you know, you can't have it all your own way. You have to do what the coach says and what everybody else wants to do. So you wouldn't be in there doing all the sprint work that you want to be doing. So does it actually suit you, given that you're low volume?
Yeah, true. It does suit me at the moment. When I was in my 20s and I was training with sort of City of Liverpool, we had a fantastic coach, Anthony Christie, who's actually moved to Ireland now. But he really sort of... He sort of split the sprinters and the distance swimmers out, and all the sprinters did like loads of race pace stuff, loads of sort of power work with bungee cords attached to the blocks, etc. We swam with sponge belts and buckets attached to our waist and stuff like that. So like loads of power work and stuff. So I think if you find the right coach, you know, you can get really good results from it. I sort of do my own thing now, which does suit me. There was an option of sort of joining the local sort of kids club, if you like, but they do a lot of medley work and a lot of distance stuff, and it wouldn't really suit me, so I just kind of do my own thing, really.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Something that gets mentioned a lot in sport generally is the miles on the clock argument, of saying that if you're somebody who was slogged to death as a kid or you know, a teenager or whatever, that actually your longevity may not be as great as somebody else who did less, kind of going through the years. where do you sit with that kind of debate in swimming? Do you, Helen, for example, do you feel like really high volume as an age grouper actually sets you up for success as a master swimmer in terms of that longevity and speed? Or do you think there is a miles on the clock thing?
I don't believe in miles on the clock, so it doesn't suit me to believe in that. I'm 51 this year. I think the much bigger, the most impactful thing on your ability to swim as a master swimmer is your technique, not how much you train. And it seems to, it's going to follow, isn't it? If you've come from a big club where you had the opportunity to do decent sized volume, you probably had a good coach that taught high level skills and technique. So your injury risk may be lower because you've got good technique. I don't particularly view myself as being very talented, but I do think I've got this rather robust body that seems to keep going more than I thought it would. So I think I'm quite lucky in that respect. I do know people that have had shoulder surgeries quite recently and in the past, and touch wood, if I can find any, I've been okay. So I think it's individual. I think what you did when you were younger does have an impact, but it's kind of what you did after that. Did you look after your body? Do you do mobility? Do you sleep well? Do you have a good diet? What's your job? Are you doing lots of manual lifting? Are you sat down all day? I think there's so many factors. I don't think volume can be kind of considered.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Yeah, fair point. And also on the kind of, on the whole thing of opinions, you described yourself as not very talented. I would disagree with that. I think anybody with a world record has got some talent, that's for sure. Dan, just on that topic of kind of miles on the clock, as somebody who swam very high volume as an age grouper, do you feel like that set you up well?
Yeah. I definitely see the miles on the clock as being a positive thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, back at No Race, so it's about like building the engine and, you know, being able to have that there. And I definitely think, you know, it doesn't last forever. I think, you know, you have a few years out or something, you know, you're going to lose some of what you had, but I think you've definitely got, you know, miles in the bank is what I'd like to think. You know, you've got that there, and it's maybe easier for you to build back up to that level, even if you're not getting as high, or, you know, build back into the big sessions if you've done them once before. I definitely think it's a positive thing to have that background.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that argument, actually. Now, I didn't do high volume as a kid, as we've already discussed. What I would say, though, is I think if I suddenly start, and actually, Dan, you sort of said this earlier, if I suddenly started doing, you know, high volume now, I think it would kill me, to be honest. Having never done it before, I think the most I ever did as an age group was 12, 15K max, because I sort of swam four sessions a week, all an hour, never really any more than that. Actually, we did have one two-hour session with an option of getting out after an hour. Guess which option I picked. okay. But I think that's it though, isn't it? If as an age grouper, I put those miles in, then I think it would have really benefited me, but I don't think it would benefit me now as a master swimmer to try and do that myself. But no, let's now talk about adding other forms of training in. So training out the pool, so gym work, you know, other forms of cardio, like running, cycling, whatever it may be. So Dan, if you say swam, I don't know, 8K a week, but you also do three gym sessions a week and a run, would you consider that therefore to be high volume training?
I don't think I would consider it high volume swim training, not as in swim specific training. I think obviously, I think, you know, you had a good podcast on this a couple of weeks ago, Joe, on, you know, how different sports can, you know, add to swim training, you know, the running, the cycling, the gym side of stuff and other sports. I think for me, the high volume comes from, you know, the number of meters in the pool. And personally, I think there's definitely a role for, you know, the gym and other sports can play in aiding your swim training. But for me, the main core has to be actual swimming. And I think meters in the pool are very important. I'd say, as the caveat, maybe 50 sprinters, less so important. But I think from, you know, 200 upwards and probably hundreds on the back end as well, having more meters in the pool is a key component to the training, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Katie, what does your schedule look like if you're getting about 5K a week in? Is there other things you're doing out of the pool to aid that?
Yeah, I sort of have to, I could keep ticking over at that really, but I do gym stuff as well. I've got I'm lucky to have a row machine at home and a few sort of weights and resistance bands and things like that. So I tend to do two or three sessions a week. Again, just short things because they have to fit in with, like, I've got little kids. So I sort of, after they've gone to bed, I'll do like half an hour HIIT downstairs. I'll do some reps on the row machine and stuff. And that's really, really helped my swimming fitness as well. And I sort of, I think there's, I still do have to swim. I couldn't just sort of not swim because I just lose my technique if I don't, you know, get in the pool a bit. But I find it really helps, definitely supplementing it with other sort of training forms as well.
Mm. So Dan alluded to this earlier about he would consider the scenario I gave him as high volume training, but not high volume swim training. Would you say what you did is high volume training, training generally?
I wouldn't say, I wouldn't call myself high volume because I do quite short sessions really. But I'd still call myself quite low volume, I think.
So Helen, I know that you've added a strength training to your program quite recently through Mr. Nathan Oxford. Sounds like it's going really well. Are you now doing that on top of all of the training that you're already doing, or did you drop off a session or two to add that in?
No, I mean, I have been doing land work for quite a while. That's all we could do in COVID, wasn't it? So I've carried on with that, but it was not, it wasn't properly planned. So I do three gym sessions a week now, and I really enjoy riding my bike, so I'll do that, but that's kind of leisure. That's something, just general activity. But yeah, having a structured gym training program, I think, is making a difference to me this year. We'll see. I mean, I've not been able to race much this year because of illness and meets being cancelled, but the couple of meets I have done, I've been pleasantly shocked by what's been on the scoreboards, but those have been in age group meets, so I've not done much masters racing this year. But I do think the land work's made a difference, but I haven't compromised on my swimming for that.
I'd be interested to ask Helen, how many sessions do you do rather than just pure volume? How many sessions and how long are the sessions? Because it sounds like your sessions are quite long, as 2 hours. Because one of my kind of thoughts is that high volume isn't always about pure meters, but having time in the pool and, you know, the amount of time you spend there. So I think an example, it's an age group example, but you know, there was the famous thing about Popovici at the World Champs. And his warm-ups were sort of up to 2 hour warm-ups, but a lot of that time was just spent sculling, getting feel for the water. And I feel that almost lends itself to the high volume, just spending time in the water and getting feel to the water. So I'd be interested, you know, how much actual time in the water you're having, Helen.
Yeah, I mean, it's 5 2-hour sessions. But some of those sessions I might not do much more than 3.5K. And then, you know, I'm definitely more Popovici than Bruno Fratus. I'm not, you know, I'm proud. They give me a 2-hour sculling set and I might get cold and a bit bored, but, you know, we do actually do quite a lot of sculling, and I do, I think to me personally, it's really important. My job, I work media, social media. I've constantly got people asking me stupid questions. Actually, any time my mind's quiet, it's when I'm in the water, and I just love just trying to feel the water. And I love the fact that I've got coaches who are teaching me new drills, and they're watching me, what I'm doing technically. I'm doing 5 2-hour sessions, and it kind of works for me around my job because I'm getting up at 5 o'clock to go and do it, a couple of mornings a week. And then I've got Saturday morning, which is 7 till 9 in the morning. So I've still got the rest of the weekend, for whatever I need to do. So I don't, you know, although my swimming does impact on family life, it's part of family life, and I can't imagine not doing it. So yeah, give me 2 hours of sculling with Popovici anytime. That's cool.
That was a really interesting question, Dan. And I actually want to put the same one to you. So kind of how many hours are you doing, or how many sessions, are you doing a week, and how much of that is spent with that feel for the water?
Yeah, so at the moment I'm doing 3 to 4 sessions a week. Try and normally do 4 sessions. I'm sure Bob will chat about it in his section, but the sessions at Trafford are normally about 1 hour and 15 long. We have a couple of 1.5-hour sessions, so you don't have as long, you know, in the pool. So with that, probably I don't spend as much time on feel and those type of, I mean, I'm always thinking about technique whenever I'm swimming. And I think, you know, the warm up, the swim now, the easy meters, you know, is key to keep thinking about it. But I don't spend as much focus time probably on it, just because I'm trying to get those important main sets in within those sort of hour and 15 sessions, you know, three times a week. So probably that's why I think adding in an extra session would be useful. It doesn't always have to be an extra hard session. I know that it's important to do that race-based stuff, but if you can do quality, low-intensity work as well, so really thinking about feel for the water, thinking about your technique and those easy sessions, that's where I think that the higher volume can really improve things, just because you're getting the feel and that there alongside easy work that's not stressing your body too much.
Yeah, if I can just add to that again, although Dan and I are sort of taking over a little, I did do more or less a whole year of doing USRPT, so ultra short race-paced training. I could not believe the results the first 6 months. I cannot get over how fast I actually swam from doing that. But after 9 months, my stroke completely fell apart. And it wasn't just me. The other breaststrokers in the squad had the same problem. And my knees were injured. And I've not been in that position the whole time I've been back in master swimming for 11 or 12 years. But that one season of doing race pace every single day, not only physically did it affect me, but also mentally, having to turn up to the pool every day, every other day, whatever it was. At that point, I was doing 8 sessions a week. Some of them were a bit shorter, but having to turn up and know that you've got to swim at that pace, and if you don't hit that pace, you've failed. That's almost the language that's used in that type of training. You haven't hit pace, therefore you stop. You've reached failure. It's actually mentally destroyed me, and I'm much happier now in a program that does a lot more drills, skills, really slow swimming, along with very fast swimming. I don't tend to do the middle bit. I'm not doing massive aerobic blocks of work, but I am doing the slow technique work, and I am doing the race and own speed work.
Yeah, it's a really good point, especially like you said, 6 months it was great, and then your body broke down, or maybe even your mind broke down as well. I definitely think there's something in that, isn't there? The intensity of training and how it all feels, and it's going to boil over at some point. Final thing I want to cover in part one is, what does an ideal session look like for each of us? So we talked about volume in terms of a weekly volume, maybe even volume per session. But Katie, I'll start with you. We know you're lower volume now, and obviously the type of swimmer you are, the type of event that you like racing would obviously determine the type of session that you like. But kind of describe meters wise and intensity of the session. Is it mainly speed work? Is it some technique? Like, what does an ideal session look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, normally I do, currently I do quite a short warm-up. I start off with some kicks and a few little drills and stuff. But then as soon as I'm warmed up, I just get straight into race-based stuff, because I don't really have the luxury of, doing a long warm-up and doing a starter set and then a main set, etc. So I just sort of get straight in there. When I was in my 20s and sort of, competing at Worlds and stuff like that, I did 3 1.5-hour sessions a week. So I'd say that's my sort of ideal. But again, we did sort of a shortish warm-up and then just loads of race-based stuff, loads of power mm-hmm. stuff with the bungee cords and things like that. And I managed to win sort of 2 consecutive world champs just off 3 sessions in the pool a week. And yeah, I wonder, you know, there's probably not that many other people have done it, but I've got the luxury of being a sprinter, I suppose. Doing 50s and 100s and the odd 200, but mostly 50s and 100s.
The horse riding is also interesting, because the other top level swimmer that we all worship is Jane Asher, and she came from a horse riding background. So I think it's not to be underestimated, the kind of impact of doing other things. And I think it's certainly mindful, but it's working your body as well. So you're not the only one that's, a successful master swimmer that has ridden horses.
It's a good point. Do you feel like it does translate, Katie?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. I mean, I've always sort of been active outside of the pool anyway, and enjoyed, cycling and running and stuff like that, and doing gym work and horses and everything. I'm always on the go. So I think that really helps sort of add to your base fitness really as well. So, and then when I got in the pool, obviously we just tuned it up and did all the really fast race-based stuff, which I seem to sort of thrive on. I know Helen said she didn't like it, but I think because I was only just sort of doing 3 sessions in the week doing it, I'd have a sort of day to recover and then I'd be back at it again. But I couldn't have done it every day, to be honest. That would be too much for me.
Interesting. Helen mentioned Bruno Frattas earlier, and I heard him recently in an interview. He said that he swam a session recently, and this is quite a typical session for him. It was only 1600 meters, just 25s. He said he didn't do a warm up. He did something dry land to warm up, but he didn't do any warming up in the water and no cool down. It was just 1600 meters worth of 25s, mostly as fast as you can, with the occasional one recovery on backstroke. How does that session sound for you, Katie?
That sounds amazing. That's like my perfect session. Although I do have to do a bit of a cool down. I think now, you know, when you get to the master stage and stuff, you know, you don't recover quite as quickly. And I always make sure that I do warm up and cool down properly. But that does sound like a pretty good session, to be honest.
Yeah, it all comes down to preference, doesn't it? And also, this guy's had, what, 3-4 shoulder surgeries? So I think he's probably paying the price. Dan, what does the perfect session look like for you?
Oh, difficult question. I enjoy a hard session, you know, what our class is, you know, high intensity session. I definitely agree that I don't think you can do those type of sessions every day of the week. I think you've got to have some easy ones in there. But if I was to say, you know, one session, probably, you know, warm up normally around about 1500 meters or so, maybe putting a bit of build in there, doing a few different strokes, you know, mixing things up in the warm up. And then for a main set, you know, I'd enjoy 2100's best average or, you know, 12200's. You know, I sometimes quite like descend work, so they descend to really fast. So 12.2s or 6.4s descend to max on the end. Anything that works you quite high intensity, I do enjoy.
Yeah, that does sound really good. Actually, I was speaking with James Simpson recently at a competition. He was singing your praises, saying that when you do 200 reps in training, the two of you are going at it. And he said he can keep pace with you for a while, but eventually you just take him.
Yeah, I think a 200 is a little bit too far for James.
That's probably it. How about you, Helen? What's the perfect sort of session for you?
Are we allowed to say 5k of social kick with fins on?
Oh yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
I do genuinely enjoy hard work, a bit like Dan, but I love kick. I could do kick all day. I just love it.
Do you always kick with fins or without?
No, not breaststroke. No.
Of course.
I don't wear fins very much, actually. Not at all.
Yeah.
I sometimes wear them for breaststroke drills, but not usually.
Yeah.
I think I can do with some of your enthusiasm for kick, Helen. I'm not a kick lover, not very good at it. So
distance freestylers aren't supposed to love it. It's breaststroke.
Yeah. Don't need to be able to kick too hard on a 1500.
No,
that's very true. Right, that's it for part one. We'll be back in the virtual room for part three to conclude this conversation. But now you'll hear me speaking to Trafford Metro coach Bob Bolton to get a coach's perspective. And now for part two, and I'm joined by Trafford Metro coach Bob Bolton to get a coach's perspective on training volume. So Bob, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me, Joe.
No, not at all. It's a pleasure to have you. So the first question that I want to ask, actually, we were just chatting to Dan there and obviously talking about his experiences of training with Trafford Metro. I believe that you guys offer 8 sessions a week in total to swimmers if they want to swim all 8, right? So how many meters across the week would you guys typically do?
Well, if you were to attend all 8, and nobody ever does, you'd be doing about 40K a week probably. Depending on whether you elect to do some of the speed sessions or whether you go for the normal mid to long distance sessions. We've actually got a 9 session in now that we've got on a temporary basis on Friday morning. So we've got a few guys that come down to that as well now. So that extra one is quite useful at the moment.
That's brilliant. So of all the, you know, I know it's a big club, you've got a lot of swimmers there. What's the kind of top mileage of any swimmer you've got? So I know Dan says he does probably 4 sessions a week. Is that probably typical of a swimmer?
Yeah, I would say that on average, people do 2 to 3 sessions a week. You're probably looking at the likes of Dan and other guys who might get to 4. You might get 1 or 2 who are doing 5 sessions a week. It's a funny one, really, because people sort of dip in and out. They get very motivated and very keen. They set themselves a goal. And then they're really on it for 6-9 months, and then the goal is achieved, and then they maybe wind down a little bit. So it changes. It's very much a movable feast. And because we've got a big number of people, big number of swimmers in the squad, you never know who's coming down on any given night, really. which from my perspective makes it more difficult to be able to design sessions that meet everyone's requirements. And that's the ideal, but it never really works quite like that. Some sessions work better for others, and some sessions don't really meet other people's requirements in the way that they'd want them to. So there's always a bit of a compromise, really, which is a shame. But when you've got a lot of swimmers, that's probably really the way it has to be, because there's a broad there's a broad cross-section of abilities as well. You've got people who are capable of swimming a 200 in a 154, and then people who would struggle to go under 3 minutes. So there's a big cross-section of abilities, and it's trying to meet everybody's expectations, which isn't always easy.
No, absolutely. And on that point of swimmers who, you know, you're never quite sure who's going to turn up, do you ever have conversations with swimmers, perhaps more the serious swimmers, really, in terms of that, you know, the people that are really into it, in terms of do you ever recommend and say, look, I don't want you coming more than X amount of times a week, you've got to take care of yourself?
No, I never ever say that to anybody. I don't want to see you dance training. No, that never happens. I have said recently to one swimmer, I think you need to just rein it back in a little bit, because I think you're getting a bit overtrained, you're ill, you're doing a bit too much, because I found out just how much he was doing in addition to his pool work, and I just felt that it wasn't putting him in a good place. So I suggested that he perhaps rein things back in. And occasionally I observe swimmers and the way they're performing, and find out what's going on with them, because they do other things outside of the pool. So just getting a feel for what they're doing is useful, and I had the opportunity then to perhaps give them a little bit of my thought process as to what they should and shouldn't be doing. So I do that sometimes. But what I do tend to do is I'll generally ask Dan if he's coming in, if you know which session he's going to come to, because he does tend to swim quite quickly. And if there's more than six people in the lane, which doesn't happen very often, but it will do closer to nationals, it makes it difficult to put in things like 200s and above, because the back marker gets lapped, and that's no good for anybody, really. So you've got to be mindful of how you distribute the swimmers within the lanes, and that means that you've got to adapt the training sessions, really, which is it can be problematic, that.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned something earlier about having swimmers that get motivated for certain periods of the year. Maybe they've got a goal, and when they achieve it, they step back a little bit. What are your thoughts generally when you're thinking about general load and general volume? Would you say ideally it's better to be consistent all year round? Or do you think there is a place for heavy loading towards a competition and then easing back off again? Do you think either way is fine, or is one better than the other?
I have a stock phrase, which is there's no one size fits all. So it's you've got to find out what works best for you. But generally, I'm a big believer in building up towards a major competition. So for us as master swimmers, we've got British Championships that's generally early in the or late in the spring or early in the summer. And then, of course, we've got nationals, which we always know the date of, the last weekend of October. So I generally try and train people towards peaking at those meets, and there are other meets that we look to target, albeit they're not necessarily major meets, so I'll probably train through them. We might have a quieter week in the run-up to those competitions, but certainly that there'll be I don't like to use the word taper because I believe you've got that something to taper from, but there are some swimmers who definitely need to wind back from the mileage that they're doing and the intensity that they're swimming at in the run-up to a competition. So, and that varies from swimmer to swimmer, because it is a bit of a black art, really. So that you've got to adapt with the swimmer's needs on that one. But generally, I do prefer to build towards a competition. And then after that, I wouldn't say detrain, but we go for probably a little bit more distance, lower intensity, certainly, focusing a little bit more on technique, because you can't maintain a high level of fitness all year round. You have to back off at some point, because it's not good mentally or physically. So there has to be that little bit of recognition that you've got to back off a bit. I'm not talking about going back to being a couch potato, but backing off from high intensity give your body a chance to recover, your mind a chance to recover, maybe do something else as well, and then come back again once you've identified when you're ready. Some people like to have a complete break. You know, they like to have a week or two off completely after a major competition. And it's almost like a cleansing of the body. They want to get the swimming out of the system almost, and then come back to it refreshed. Others like to keep it going. Some people are frightened of backing off because they feel like they'll lose the fitness and they don't have to go through the pain barrier to get it back again. So everybody's different.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of everybody's different, one of the debates that we're having with the swimmers are around sprinter versus maybe middle distance to long distance, and therefore training loads that are required. Now, some people believe that it doesn't matter if you're a sprinter or a middle distance. You know, you should train X amount of volume, and obviously that's dependent on each person. But where do you sit? So if you have a swimmer that is just a pure 50 swimmer, and then you have a swimmer that's a 200 and a 400 swimmer, if you were almost writing out a personalized training load for them, would they look quite different? Not on the basis that they're two individuals, but on the basis that they're different swimmers and different events.
Yeah, specificity is really important. You've got to identify that the sprinters and the long distance swimmers, and you would write a program that is different for them. However, when you've got a team of different types of swimmers all coming together in the pool at the same time, it's not quite so simple to do that. Yes. I do believe that you have to have a good aerobic base to build sprint speed off. That said, there are some swimmers who can do very low mileage. They can do all they need to do in 1,000 to 1,500 meters, and that includes a big warm-up, some short, very high-intensity sprints, and that's them. Swim down, off you go. And that, very often for them mentally, works really well as physically, because they don't want to swim big mileage. And at the end of the day, if you're doing something you don't want to do, unless your goal overrides that thought process, you're not going to perform at your best. So you've got to be in some kind of for want of a better word, a happy place with your training. Mm. But generally, I would say, shorter distance for the sprinters. It's high intensity. You've got to have the right rest periods. You can't just do high intensity sessions one after the other after the other.
Yeah,
your body needs to recover and needs to rest and repair. It's got to refuel. And as the swimmer gets older, that process takes a little bit longer. So it makes more sense to put some aerobic work in between the high-intensity sessions. The way I generally plan this within our club is that Thursday nights we have a speed session and Sunday nights we have a speed session. They're optional. There's also another session that runs alongside it, which is more aerobic based. When I say aerobic, it can be quite unpleasant, really, most of the time, but not quite as vomit inducing as the sprint sessions can be. So they have a choice. They've got a split, and then there are other sessions that they can recover sort of between the speed sessions if they want to.
Yeah, that sounds good. Can you give us an example of a swimmer who swims with you at Trafford Metro whose ideal is to train really high volume, and then an example of somebody who kind of fits that profile of the short and sweet?
And the thing is that they've sort of become hybrid models, these swimmers, because you look at somebody like Dan. Dan is definitely he excels at everything, really, but he's particularly good at the distance events, so 400, 800, 1500. His record will show that he's a brilliant performer, but he's also a very capable 100 and 200 swimmer. He could still knock out a fast 50 as well, but he would acknowledge, I'm sure, that he's got swimmers around him who can swim a 50 faster because that's their bag and that's not really his bag. But he could still do, as he did last night, 8 50s on 5 minutes, and he'd knock them all out in high 25s, low 26s. So he's perfectly capable of doing it. And that's an example of the speed session that we did last night. We had about an hour and 10 minutes to get that done. So that kind of speed work, short space of time, all done and dusted. So Dan, distance swimmer, but he recognises he does need to have some speed as well. There are one or two others who prefer to do distance swimming. We've got the likes of Becky Lennon, who is very keen on the longer distances. A lot of the swimmers tend to be, they'll do all sorts of different swims. You've got the likes of James Simpson, who he's more of an out-and-out sprinter. So he's a 50 man and 100, but he's going to do a 200 as well. You'll never see him go over 200, I don't think. But then you've got someone like Joe Keighley, who's Joe's late 20s now, similar age to Simo. Joe's a breaststroker, sprinter, so he does 100s, 50s, 100s. Don't think you see him doing a 200 breaststroke very often. But last year at Nationals, he did an 800 free just for a change and won it.
Yeah.
So, so, you know, you never know that they're all capable of doing stuff. But generally, you'll find that it's the likes of Dan who veers towards the distance, and it's the likes of Simo who veers towards the sprints. But they'll both do the same session together, and they'll do it in the same lane or side by side. And if it's longer distance swims, Dan will drag Simo along, and Simo really benefits from it. And it builds his aerobic base up, and he's better able to sprint off it.
Yeah, no, all sounds really good and healthy. In terms of that more kind of distance element and the higher volume sort of side of things, this thing of quality over quantity, you know, would you rather coach somebody, you know, let's say hypothetically 15K a week, but every single meter is fantastic, as opposed to 25K a week, but there's a lot of junk miles in there that it's just aimless swimming?
I think it's a coach's cop out to put just junk mileage together. I urge all the coaches that I train to think about every line that they write in a session plan, and if it means that it fits the aims and the objectives of the session, then that's fine. But if you're just putting it in just to make some mileage up, why are you doing it? There has to be some kind of a thought process that has an outcome that you're looking to achieve. So I wouldn't just throw in extra mileage just for the sake of it. Friday night session tends to be a little bit quieter because it's only made up of the sad people who have no friends like myself. So I'm always there, but some of them come in and they like to do the Friday night session. I joke with them about being sad. They're not really. They're great people. But I give them some flexibility to do pretty much what they want within reason. So we could be running four different types of sessions. So with some of them, I'll do some technique work. So we'll put stretch cords on. We'll do all kinds of technical work on different strokes if that's what they want to do. I've got a group of three or four guys who like to do 200s. So they'll do 12 200s and it'll move towards 15 200s because they want to do a fast 200. And I tell them every week, you're not going to swim a faster 200 doing all these 200s on 3 minutes. But lo and behold, they're able to knock out a decent 800 now. So
yeah,
that works for them. Dan comes in, sometimes he'll do the 200s. Sometimes he'll come in with a set that he'd quite like to do himself. Maybe Simo will be in and he might do it with him, or Simo might want to do some sprints. And then I put together another session that is geared to middle distance that it could have any number of different elements within it. It could have pacing elements in it. There could be some speed work in there, but generally it'll be geared towards the slower lanes being able to achieve somewhere in the region of 3,200 meters, and the faster lanes could be up to 4,000 meters.
Yeah, sounds great. So
there's a little bit of variance in there.
Yeah, no, it sounds really good. One question that I asked Dan, Helen and Katie actually was this idea of bringing in dryland training. So for example, gym work, you know, maybe some yoga, you know, mobility work, maybe even other forms of cardio, like getting a run in or something like that. Yeah. And I asked each of them, what would you rather do? Would you rather do nothing but swimming and you do a lot of it? Or would you rather take a few swimming sessions out and it replace them with, say, a couple of gym sessions or something like that? What are your thoughts on dryland training and something else other than swimming? Would you rather go all in on swimming as a coach?
Unfortunately, the way our program works, there is only Wednesday night that we have free. So every other day we're swimming. And it's difficult to get people together for a gym session. Otherwise I would run that. So most people, if they like that sort of thing, they do their own thing in their own time. What I would say about that is that there are some people who like to swim and just swim, and they're not interested in going to gyms. They're not interested in anything else, they just like to swim. So if that's what floats the boat, then crack on and do it. Similarly, if from a mental perspective, you like to do other things that break up swimming, then I would say, by all means, go ahead and do them. Most other sporting activities tend to be complementary towards swimming. What I would say is if you're going to go out and do some running, take it steady at first, because the last thing we want is running injuries, because it's an impact sport. So it's more likely to cause some injuries that could keep you out of the pool. So unless you are a competent runner and you understand your body for running, I'd be careful with that. Similarly with the gym, but what I do particularly like about the gym is that you can target swim specific muscles and you can train them quicker, you can do it in less time and probably to a higher standard, higher level, which gives you more time in the pool to focus on the skills aspect of swimming. So in an ideal world, if I knew they were all doing a particular type of gym routine, I could then focus a bit more on certain things within the pool. Because I don't know what everybody's doing and when they're doing it, that's not quite so straightforward. So it doesn't tend to influence what I design for them in the pool. Yeah. I think if you target swim specific muscles, you're looking at doing things like, if you're not using machinery, doing press ups, squats, certainly working the core with a variety of different core exercises. If you're doing pull ups, if you're going into the machinery side of things, you can be lifting free weights. All of those things are geared towards developing swim-specific muscles, and I would recommend that, particularly for the aging swimmer, because as you get older, the muscles start to waste a little bit, and you really need to be looking at trying to slow that process down. I mean, once you get to the age of 30, 40, the process starts. It creeps up on you very slowly. But if you keep lifting weights, and certainly as you get older into your 50s and into your 60s, if you lift weights, you will slow the process down and you will retain a level of strength. Looking at it from a purely health perspective as well, it will give you a better quality of life. Another thing is balance. That's something else that we should all be thinking about, balance and agility, because if you can maintain good balance as you get older, you'll certainly... Well, you have less risk of injury going forwards if you're able to maintain your balance. And just generally, doing things outside of the pool mentally is a good thing, but also physically, it will help you swimming in the pool. If there was one thing I would suggest to any swimmer that wants to do something different outside the pool, I would say go off and find a good yoga class and get some really good yoga stretching done. Stretching, you can't really underestimate the value of stretching, particularly as you get older.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny, my wife and I, we were doing it was called body balance class, which is kind of a mixture of yoga and Pilates. We started doing that in the sort of summer last year, and we did it right through till Christmas. And then we've actually moved up the country, and unfortunately the leisure centre that we're now part of, they don't actually run this kind of session, which is a real shame, because we had, as I say, 3 or 4 months of it, and I have to say I really enjoyed it. And more specifically in the session itself, there were certain moves or stretches that when I first went I found really difficult. And sort of towards Christmas, started to think, actually, I'm really getting into these. And it's only when you commit to it for a while that you really start to see the benefit of it.
Well, the thing is, if you stretch more, you've got more range of movement, your mobility improves. It makes it easier to make your stroke longer. And if you're coupling that with some strength work, it means you've got a longer stroke that's stronger. You're going to propel yourself through the water more efficiently.
No, absolutely. So final question
there. Streamline position as well.
Yeah, for sure. So final question, and I asked this again to all three guys, and I answered it myself as well, right at the start of this podcast, is for a master swimmer, so thinking about adults that have full-time jobs or part-time jobs or you know, busy family lives, so you're not a kid that just can sort of do what you want around school. When you think of high volume, what figure do you think of in your head? What's the first figure that kind of comes into your head as being a high volume per week?
high volume, I would think, is probably 20K a week. If you're doing anything from 20 above, I would say that's reasonably high volume for a family orientated person who has got a busy lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's 4K sessions a week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's big. That's heavy. Mm. Yeah. So that's, we kind of determined, I don't necessarily think Helen was buying into this, but we kind of determined that the 12K and above, you could sort of say is high volume. Anything below about 8K is low volume, and sort of between 8 and 12 was maybe mid. But perhaps we were just being generous to ourselves because we don't do that much.
Well, I think 12 to 20 is a pretty good area to be in. If you can be between 12 and 20, preferably a little bit higher than, you know, closer to 20 than 12, I think you're getting a really decent amount of volume in. But it all depends on what that volume is made up of. It's the quality of that volume. Any fool can find a few hours and get in and swim the volume. It's how you swim that volume that counts. And when you've got a short period of time in the pool, like our sessions are only theoretically an hour long, but in reality, because I have a good relationship with the pool providers, and I can't underestimate the value of having that relationship, they allow me to carry on a bit later. So our sessions are about an hour and a quarter. So by the time you've done a warm-up and you've not got loads of time, so you've really got to make every part of that session count to get the most out of it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely concur with that. And that's exactly what we've been talking about with the other guys. It's quality absolutely over quantity, regardless of the volume. Thanks for joining us, Bob. That was really helpful. And now back to the other guys for part three.
Been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm back in the room for part three. Helen, Dan and Katie have joined me. And this time we are going to team up, arguing the case for high volume versus low volume, which is best. And also we do need to consider the whole sprinter versus middle to long distance debate as well. So as you've already established, Dan and Helen sort of represent the high volume team. Katie and I represent the low volume team. So as the card dealer, I don't want to go first, so I'm going to hand this one over to Helen and Dan. Between the two of you, give us your case as to why high volume. And when I say high volume, again, just a caveat, we're talking about master swimming here. We've already established kind of 12K plus. We're classing as high volume. You guys, I know, do more than that. But give us your case as to why it's the best type of training.
Do you want to go, Helen? Or?
Well, why not? I think my argument, and it applies to sprinters as well as distance swimmers, if you go to a meet and it's over 2 or 3 days and you want to swim multiple events, you need to be pretty fit to handle that. And I'm going to call on one of your previous guests from a couple of weeks ago, Joe, Mike Hodgson. He's a sprinter, a phenomenal sprinter across every stroke. The guy is swimming more than I do. I think that's a point to note. And, you know, all those Woking swimmers, so Michelle Ware, who's got a load of records on everything except breaststroke, basically. She can sprint anything. Breaststroke's actually okay, but she's swimming similar volume to me. So I don't think it's as simple as whether you're a sprinter or a distance swimmer, but my case for high volume is that it gives you the opportunity to work not just on the speed and power elements of swimming, also the technical and skills and kind of the slower work as well. So it gives you the kind of full package in terms of being a swimmer.
I like it. Dan?
Similar. I think high volume gives the opportunity to work on more facets of your sport. I think you can still do the race pace, the really high intensity sprints, but also you're building a bigger endurance component, which you can use. We talked about the miles in the bank type thing, which you can use further down the line. So I think that's really important. I'm a big believer that if you could add extra swimming, you want to be faster at swimming, adding extra swimming would be better than doing any work outside of the pool, with the caveat as long as it's quality swimming and it's not affecting your mental state. So if you love doing other stuff out the pool and going into the pool and doing extra meters is going to put a drain on you mentally, I don't think it's the right thing. But if you can enjoy doing more work in the pool, that will get your swimming faster.
Do you, so Helen mentioned this earlier in the case of Mike Hodgson, do you agree with Helen's statement around it doesn't matter whether you're a sprinter or mid to long distance, more swimming is better?
Yeah, I think if you can do more, it's better. I think, especially for the 50-meter swimmers, I definitely think there's something to be said about doing power work, you know, strength work in the gym. I do think that needs to be part of their routine. But if they could add more volume and they're still doing that high intensity, I think, like we spoke about before, if they could do more volume in it, it's low intensity, working on technique or feel, I think that's only going to add to their skill set, really.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's interesting. Not sure if I'm buying it at the moment, though. So team low volume, let's let's discuss. So Katie, I know you'd probably like to do more if you could. But as you're on team low volume, tell us why it's good.
Yeah, I would like to do a little bit more. But I find that the volume I'm doing at the moment fits in really nicely around family commitments, work commitments. I can just do a quick session in my lunchtime. I can go short, sharp session is done. I get out. It leaves me time as well to do the strength training and stuff outside of the pool. That's why really. But I am lucky to be a sprinter because if I was 400 meter swimmer or something, it wouldn't work. But it all seems to work out okay.
I absolutely concur. I think low volume is more fun because what I personally like is the fact that I don't swim every day, and so I think every time I go, I'm like raring to go. I'm fresh. I have that day in between each session to kind of reflect, think about the next one. It's not a grind. I'm not having to get up every morning and do it. So I think on that basis, it's fun. I get to mix in more sports. So I do like 3 gym sessions a week. I like to go running once a week. So I like the mixture of things as well. So I still consider it quite high volume training generally, as we talked about earlier. But obviously, I know it's low volume swimming. But again, I like the fact that I can do more things, and actually that I can just do more things generally. So I have other hobbies as well that if I was doing more swimming, I wouldn't be able to do them. So that's kind of my main argument really for low volume. I know when it comes to racing, you know, obviously more training is better, but for the sake of a few extra hundreds, maybe a second or hundredths of a second, you know, I think I'd rather stick to low volume, even though we always want to be that little bit faster. I'm going to come back to the high volume guys. What do you think is the best mix of training? If I could offer you, well, you have to pick one scenario here. There's 2 scenarios on offer. You've got to pick one. So Dan, you can either just do swimming and you can swim to your heart's content, you know, 100K a week if you really want, or a mixture of, you know, swimming and dry land. Again, it can be nice and high volume, but you've got to think realistically here. Like if you're going to mix in, say, a few gym sessions and a run or something like that, which would you rather do, just swimming or a bit of a mix?
I think I would probably prefer just swimming just because I really love, you know, swimming. I think what would be best for me, though, would be to do a mix. I think when you get into the really high volumes, and I think, you know, anything probably for a master's swimmer above, you know, 30, 35,000, I think the reward of doing more becomes less and less. And maybe adding that gym in or that alternative sport would add more than it would, say, someone who is only doing, you know, 5-10,000 a week, adding extra meters on there would probably be more useful. But I think if I could still do high volume in the pool, I would definitely want to do other stuff as well, because it's going to add those small gains to your swimming.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. From a mental point of view, Helen, do you ever find that high volume is a drain?
In my head, I don't do high volume. I'm only doing half what I used to do. And also my job for 10 years was working with the Brownlee brothers and professional cyclists. Swimmers do not train high volume.
Fair enough.
That's like, I just have that slightly warped perspective. I know I'm not normal, so.
No, I think it's fair enough. Katie, I think from a low volume point of view and thinking from a mental point of view, I said it earlier, I'm always raring to go for a session because I don't do that many of them. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think doing a bit of gym, bit of swimming, short, sharp stuff, I think it keeps it fresh. It keeps me interested in it. I think if I swam every day, I think I'd fall out of love with it and I wouldn't enjoy it as much. I just, you know, if I had to get up every morning and go to the pool, I don't know, it wouldn't become something I'd enjoy. I think it would become more of a chore to do it. Some people love getting up every morning and doing it, so everyone's a bit different, but for me, yeah, it just keeps it fresh, and I look forward to each session then as well.
Yeah. Well, because I like winning, I'm going to add another thing to my low volume argument. And that is that the higher the volume, the more food you've got to eat. So your food bill goes up. You've got to buy, you've got to cook more meals.
I love food. I cannot stop doing volume because I'd have to stop eating. I love food.
I agree. It means you can eat more.
It might mean you can eat more, but I'm calling a increased life admin, and I think that's too much. Minimalism is best. The final thing I want to cover is when you're behind the block, ready to race. Is there? And actually, I'm going to come to the high volume guys on this to start with. So Dan, I'll come to you. Do you ever have like a fear of, I mean, I'm not sure if you've ever had times in your master swimming life where you've not been able to train that much for whatever reason, you know, work or maybe a bit of a niggle or something like that. If you've not hit, say, a certain meterage per week for a short while, do you go into that race with a little bit of fear?
I wouldn't say fear, maybe a bit of apprehension or, you know, the unknown of what's going to happen at the end of a race. Yeah, I think, you know, there have been times where I've done less, especially around COVID, and you know, there's a period where we couldn't do any. And I think, you know, my distance swimming suffered as a result of that. I think something like a 1500, you know, I'm never going to feel super confident, even off the meters I'm doing at the moment, you know, going into the back end. But I think, you know, generally for the more middle distance, the 200, 400, you know, I feel, you know, reasonably happy with where I'm at.
Yeah. Do you feel the same, Helen?
Similar. If I make a decision to go to a meet, it's because I think that I can do okay. And then I just always want to be open-minded. I don't kind of try to pre-decide how well I'm going to do based on my training. I think how I'm going to swim is probably more related to how well I've done in the most recent block of race pace sets rather than the overall volume. So if I've been able to hit pace and I haven't, got stuck in traffic and turned up late, and my preparation kind of on the day is, you know, I like to slow everything down, that, you know, you're just focusing on what you're doing for the next hour and a half, 2 hours when you come up to a race. As long as I feel calm and I'm generally happy, and then I'll just be at mine and see what happens. I do track my volume, but I don't pay as much attention to it as you might think.
Yeah.
I think I'd echo what Helen just said, that I would definitely focus more on the quality I've done and the times maybe I've done in training rather than the pure volume. So I've been doing really good times on the distance work in training, but I'd not quite been doing as much, then I would definitely feel more confident. Whereas if the times hadn't been there at all in training, I would probably be a bit more, you know, unsure of what's going to happen.
Yeah. No, and that's a good argument. And so Katie, finally then, given that we don't swim a lot, like when you're ready to race, does that ever come into your mind? Do you ever think, I wish I'd have done more, or do you still go in feeling really confident?
Most of the time I feel really confident. I do remember standing on the blocks though at Sheffield in October last year for Nationals, just about to race in the 100 back, which was my first race of the weekend, thinking, I don't know how to swim this. I don't know. I didn't have a clue what sort of a time I might get. I didn't know if I'd die or what was going to happen, but I just sort of, yeah, set off, you know, with confidence and stuff, and it was actually fine. But yeah, it's quite rare that I sort of feel that way. I usually feel quite prepared and stuff, but I haven't done that much training leading into that. But yeah, like the other guys have said, I sort of, if I'm hitting times in training and stuff, then I'm generally quite confident. And like Helen, as long as, you know, you get there in plenty of time, you do your usual preparations and stuff, I usually feel pretty confident.
Yeah, no, all good answers. And I think how we conclude this is that either way is fine. I'm sat with three incredibly fast swimmers that all achieve great things on the volume that they do. So clearly there is no perfect volume. The perfect volume exists for each individual, I suppose. But hopefully what we've done with this conversation is just open people's minds a little bit more. So whether they think they'd like to swim a bit more or they fear swimming less, you know, whatever way they can maybe come away thinking, well, do you know what, there's always alternatives, and if say for example my volume drops off, it's probably not the end of the world. I probably will still swim just as fast. I'll just have to maybe find other ways of doing it. Would you guys all agree with that? There is no perfect volume. It's all very individual, and we've had a decent conversation here.
One of the key things I think that we've mentioned that is making sure you still enjoy the sport, and whatever you enjoy doing I think is a really important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, anything,
sorry, yeah.
Yeah, we all enjoy it. Well, we do it because we enjoy it, and you know, whatever you can fit in around your life, whatever you're happy doing, I think that's, you know, that's the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Any final words, Helen?
No, it's been a really interesting chat, and I'm not closed-minded to doing a short volume program. I just don't swim for a club that trains that way at the moment, but maybe I'll train that way in the future. I'm, you know, I'm open-minded to trying all sorts of ways of training.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open-minded too, but I definitely wouldn't swap places with you.
Same here.
I think I'd be in a coffin, honestly. Give me 2 weeks of your training and you'd be burying me. Anyway, thank you very much, guys. That was great. Thanks for coming on the podcast. And do leave your comments on Facebook, on Instagram. Let us know what sort of training volume you do, what you think your ideal is, or what you think the ideal is. Thank you very much.